Bonjour, good morning. Hello everyone, good morning. And thanks for having me here at Tech Days in Geneva. It's my second time in Switzerland. First time was in Zurich a couple of years back. And today we're going to talk about, well, the client-side scripting options that we as client-side developers have. So I'm going to start, and everything seems to be off-screen for some reason. Ah, it's fine. Okay, it's fine. So we're going to start by giving you an overview of the options that we have, and then we're going to focus a bit more on jQuery. We're going to see why that is, of course, as well. Let me first introduce myself. So my name is Gilles Kleren. I'm a Microsoft RD, a regional director, and an MVP for Silverlight. I've been doing quite a lot of .NET code in my years. I'm coming from an ASP.NET background. I moved into Silverlight, well, three, four years ago. I've done a lot of ASP.NET as well. I've been at many conferences in Germany, in France, in Norway. I'll be going to many Scandinavian countries in the coming months as well. So you can catch me at many conferences in the coming months. I've also written a book on Silverlight, which is called Silverlight for Data Services Cookbook, which talks about using Silverlight in an enterprise environment to make enterprise-level business applications with Silverlight. I will be uploading the demos, and I think the slides are going to be on the Tech Day site as well, but all my demos are going to be on my site, and that's www.snowball.be, which you can see there at the bottom. You have also my email if you want to send me a mail afterwards. Don't hesitate if you have any questions on this or on Silverlight. I've also put up my Twitter there, so you can contact me via Twitter as well, or follow me or spam me via Twitter as well. So, as mentioned, what are we going to be doing today? In the first part, I'm going to give you an overview of the current state of the client-side scripting options that the ASP.NET developer or .NET developer has today. We're going to take a look at where we are today. Situation might be a bit complicated. What is Microsoft's stand on the different options that we have for client-side scripting? So we're going to start by taking a look at where we are, take a look at what the current state of ASP.NET Ajax is, as well as where we are with the toolkit. That's going to take about 10 to 15 minutes. And after that, I'm going to dive into jQuery, and you'll soon see why the most of the talk is actually aimed at jQuery. We're going to take a look at, I'm going to give quite a full overview of jQuery. I'm going to start explaining you what jQuery is, where it can help you, some fundamental parts you really have to grasp. Then we're going to take out how we can work with elements, work with events, work with Ajax, because that's one of the things, one of the locations where jQuery really can help you as a .NET developer. Going to take a brief look at animations. There is some animation options inside of jQuery. We're going to take a look at jQuery UI as well, and we're going to take a look at some new options, and those include templating, globalization, and data linking. So quite a full agenda, so let's get started right away. So as mentioned, the first part, I'm going to try giving you an overview of where we are today with the client-side scripting options for the .NET developer. Very important announcement in this area was made about a year ago by Scott Guthrie at Mix 2010, that was. Up until then, Microsoft actively developed what was called the Ajax client library. So the client-side library was actually a full client-side scripting framework, built of course with JavaScript, to actually make JavaScript a bit more like .NET. You had something like .NET, you had JavaScript namespaces, you could do something like object orientation inside of JavaScript. So actually the client-side scripting framework from Ajax made JavaScript like a .NET language. Now, about a year ago, Microsoft announced that they were stopping any further development in this area. They were not going to do any further development on this client-side library, which was actually quite a big announcement. So that actually fully stopped. Instead of using that, Microsoft actually advises us to now move into jQuery, like they did. What they were going to do, and they announced that as well at Mix last year, they were actually going to start developing jQuery code. They were going to start building jQuery plugins. We'll see later on what those are, but those are, as you probably can imagine, like extensions for jQuery. And they were going to start with the development of those. And what they're going to start with, or what they were going to start with at that time, was bringing functionality that they had already built in the Ajax client library into jQuery. And we'll see those plugins later on. So if you start today with Ajax or JavaScript in general, client-side scripting, the Ajax client library might not be a good place to start because Microsoft doesn't actively develop on that anymore. They said, well, we're going to move to jQuery. So if you have any investment in this, well, there's no reason to fear because Microsoft will keep on supporting this because it's an official product. But for the rest, there's not going to be any further development in that. So jQuery is a better move instead of the client library from Ajax. However, there is active development today still in ASP.NET Ajax and the ASP.NET Ajax Control Toolkit. Let's take a look at those. So I think we all know Ajax. Ajax was introduced with ASP.NET 2.0 quite a few years ago already. And it was introduced as the most important block of that was the script manager. And the script manager, as well as ASP.NET Ajax, evolved with the introduction of .NET 3.5 and .NET 4.0. So there's actively being new features introduced into this part. And the script manager, I think you all know, it is a server-side control that serves to download scripts to the client side, both from Microsoft as well as our own scripts, if you want to. It will send the correct scripts, depending on the used browser, to the client side. That's what the script manager does. Now, the script manager actually has more extension points or more options than many people think. For example, as mentioned, we can use it to send our own scripts, and it can combine those scripts. And it can also compress those scripts if we want to. It can also make the scripts cached on our machine so that they don't get disposed on the client-side machine, and they are being cached on the local on the client side. As well as there is a new feature that was introduced with .NET 4 that they allowed the script manager to download scripts from a CDN. We'll take a look at these features in a bit more detail. So as mentioned, there is now the option to combine scripts. Now, with the composite script function, or the functionality that was added to manager, it is now possible to make more than one script into just one script file. For example, if you have jQuery used in your application and another script file, and doesn't matter how many, it can combine those scripts into just one script file. Why is that useful? Well, it will actually help you, or help the browser to be loading the page faster, because there's only one call to the server to download that script. On top of that combined script gets what it's called a far future header. And a far future header automatically sets the expires date of the script to today plus 1 year, making sure that script doesn't get disposed on the client side and it gets cached automatically, making all future calls a lot faster. Also, the script code is going to be compressed using gzip compression. That's all done for you. You don't have to do anything for that with the script manager in version 4. What I also said is that it can use a CDN. Now, for the people who don't know what a CDN is, it's none of the things that you see there at the top. It's actually a content delivery network. Now, what is a content delivery network? It's a network of servers that Microsoft hosts, that Microsoft manages, that contain the scripts for Ajax, that contain the scripts even for jQuery, and they are spread all around the globe. A content delivery network aims at getting those scripts at the client faster. What you want, for example, if I'm from Belgium and I'm going to a Belgian site, it's going to be faster than when someone is accessing that same site from the US. Even if the script that has to be loaded, it's going to be quite a lot slower. What the CDN will do, it will make sure that if the guy from the US is downloading the script from my site, it will actually be downloaded from a location in the US instead of my Belgian site or my Belgian server. How can we make that CDN work? Well, we just set the enable CDN on the script manager, which was added by .NET 4, to true, and automatically the scripts from Microsoft, Ajax, even the web form scripts, or the ATEC Control Toolkit, all the scripts are on a CDN, and they will not be downloaded from our own server, but they will be downloaded from Microsoft's server. Also, you see jQuery up there. Microsoft also has a CDN available for jQuery, jQuery UI, jQuery Validate. The most important jQuery files, including all versions, are located on these CDN servers. It's something that you want to use for external apps, for websites, external-facing websites. Internal-facing websites or internal web applications, they actually don't really benefit from this because it's going to be only accessed from within your corporation. Why would you use a CDN? I actually think I mentioned most of these things already. It makes your site load faster because the scripts are downloaded from a location near to where the user is located. It will make your site faster. It will also make your total cost of ownership lower because the bandwidth is going down. The scripts are downloaded from Microsoft. If jQuery has to be downloaded a million times from your server or from Microsoft server, it's not going to cost you a thing. It's also going to load faster for the end user because not only is it closer to the service, not only closer to the user, but also when I go to a site that uses a CDN and I go to another site that uses that same CDN, I'm going to, on my client, have that script already cached. And I can use that script that is cached on my machine. It's also automatically adding a far future header. There's also, again, the expiry date that is set to today plus 1 year. So, again, that script is not being disposed on the client. It's also there for quite a long time. It is, however, the CDN should not be down. Although it shouldn't be down, it can be down at some occasion. There is always the possibility that it's down, and we have to make sure that we capture that in our code. So I'm going to show you the code in just a minute as well. But as you can see here, it's advised to always use a fallback. In the first line, I'm downloading the script from a CDN from Microsoft. It is the jQuery 1.4.2. If, however, on the next line, I'm arriving and the script is not available there, so jQuery remains undefined, that means that for some reason I couldn't access the CDN. The CDN was unavailable for some reason. And what am I instead doing? I'm checking if jQuery is undefined, and then I'm downloading the script for my own server. So it is advised to always use a fallback in case you want to use a CDN. All right, let's take a look at using the script manager. I hope this is readable for everyone. It's font size 18. Is it readable for everyone at the back? I came over there and it was readable for my eyes. Everyone can read it? All right, cool. So we have here a script manager. Let's first run this page very quickly. It's not loading. That's normal because I'm using Fiddler for this. All right, I think everyone knows Fiddler. It's a debugger proxy allowing you to capture all that goes through your local host or your server. So I'm going to capture the requests. So let's reload this page. All right. It has loaded some scripts. Let's take a look at the code for this. There's just a very basic script manager on this page that has inside of it a composite script block. And that composite script has a script tag that contains a few scripts of my own. It has some script and some other script. As you can see, those are very basic scripts that are located here in my scripts directory. Nothing special here. It's just a document I write that is in there and in this one as well. All right. So because I placed those inside of a composite script block, I should use this one. Because I placed those in a composite script block, the script manager will combine these two into just one script. It will just paste the one below the other. Let's take a look at what Fiddler saw us doing. I'm going to zoom in, and then I'm going to do a bit of searching. And let's take a look at text view. That's not the one. Can be this one. Nope. You never know which one it's going to be. There we go. Of course, it was the first one. So what you saw here, or what you can see here, is that these two scripts, the some script and some other script, are just pasted one below the other. Automatically, the headers, if you take a look at the headers, the header is placed at 2012. Last time I checked, it was 2011, so I think it's 2011 still. So it actually adds a 1 year to the header for removing this from the cache. So that's the far future header. And automatically the script was being compressed because I had to unzip it locally within Fiddler as well. That's what the script manager can do with more than one script that we add to it. Also, so now as you perhaps, I should zoom in once more, it has downloaded quite a few scripts. These are the ones coming from Microsoft's web forms that's being used for this page. They are downloaded from my site as well. I have to host them. They are downloaded from my site as well. When I now go back to my Visual Studio and set the CDN usage to true, so enable CDN, set this to true, and I save this, I may have to clear my cache, because otherwise you may not see it because of the future header. So let's, I think I've saved this. All right, let's run this page again. There we go. All right, the scripts are being downloaded again. And let's now take a look at what it did. So instead of using the 127.0.0.1, which is the local host, it has now downloaded the scripts from Ajax from the CDN from Microsoft. As you can see, it downloaded from ajax.microsoft.com. And automatically, these also receive a far future header, being 2012 as well. All right? So that's what the script manager can do for you. Let's move on to the control toolkit. The control toolkit, I think you all know, I hope you all know, it is also introduced with ASP.NET 2.0. And when Ajax was introduced a few months later, there was a control toolkit, which is still quite the same. It is a huge set of extra controls we can use in our websites. There is a server-side edition available using server controls, and there's also a client-side, a fully client-side version available. So you can use it in combination with web forms if you want to. That's a server-side version. If you want to, for example, use the Ajax control toolkit in combination with jQuery, you can. Is this microphone falling away sometimes? Is it dropping sometimes? Because I hear my voice going up and down. No? Okay, it's fine. Now, we can use this client-side version in combination with jQuery if you want to, because that's just client-side controls that you can use with jQuery or with any other technology, in fact, because it's just client-side script that's being used. There's actual development on this one. There's new controls being introduced. It works with .NET 3.5. It works with 4.0. And also, these scripts are available on the CDN. What was introduced, these are the controls. I'm not going to show you all the controls. There's quite a full list of controls. What was introduced as well is the Ajax minifier. The Ajax minifier is a cool tool that allows you to compress both your CSS and your JavaScript files, making, again, your sites load a lot faster. Let me show you these two in action. So the control toolkit, you can download it for free. Of course, it is a huge set of basically many new controls you can use on your site. This is a demo site that comes along, and as you can see, it's quite a long list of extra controls that you can use inside of your pages. For example, there is things like collapsible panels that, well, collapse and expand if you click on them. There is an HTML editor in there that you can use for rich text editing within the browser. Seems to be loading quite slow. I think we all know what this thing does. I'm not going to show you this any further. You can take a look at it at your own pace. Now, what is more interesting to see, for example, is the Ajax minifier. And the Ajax minifier is, as mentioned, a tool that will compress JavaScript and CSS files. It's also available for free from the site where you can download the control toolkit. That's ajax.controltoolkit.codeplex.com. So what this tool will do, I have a script in here, script.js, and it is the full version of jQuery. And as you can see, it is formatted for readability. Everyone can read it. It's quite large. It's about 6,000 lines, which is quite huge. That's the full code of jQuery. This file is now, if you can read it, 160K. Now, nobody actually needs to see this when he visits my site. No one has to read this. This doesn't have to be formatted for readability. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to compress this. I'm going to get all the white space, all the breaks out of there so that the code is much more compact. And that's what the minifier can do for me. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to run this tool, which is the HX minifier. It's a client, it's a command line tool. So I'm going to say HX min, compress this script. And this is going to be the output script, script min.js. Let's run this. It's going to be minifying that file. Let's take a look at the new size now. It is now 72K. That's about 2.5 times compressed. And sometimes it achieves a 3, that depends on the script that you give it. If you take a look at this script now, it is, I'm going to zoom out because otherwise I cannot scroll, it is now all on one huge long line, as you can see. This is quite hard to debug, I think, and quite hard to read, in fact. But actually, no one that visits my site has to debug or start reading this. So that's why I like to compress my scripts. This also has an even more advanced mode, let's say, and that's called HyperCrunch. Don't know where I have it here. There I have it. If you use HyperCrunch, then that's the parameter minus hc, that will actually make the names, change the names of variables. So if you have, for example, name ABCDE, it's going to compress that to A, making the names of variables even smaller. This generally doesn't get you so much advantage anymore. I think it's going to be about, let's see, it's now 69K. So that's another 3K that was chopped off. Not that much, but actually 3K is still quite okay. And it also works perfectly with it's quite difficult to see. It also works with CSS. So if I use a CSS file here, it will also compress my CSS file with 50%, it says. So my CSS was 5K and it now compressed it into 3K, as you can see here. And also it places it just on one line. All right? So to summarize this part, I think we can say that Microsoft focuses on jQuery, doesn't focus anymore on using or developing any further the client-side library. That's gone. It's still there, but it doesn't get any active development. So why invest in using that one? But Microsoft does invest in the control toolkit, and it also invests in Ajax as well. But it also invests in jQuery. Microsoft is now an official contributor for the jQuery platform. And that's why the rest of this talk I'm going to focus on explaining you what jQuery is and giving you a basic overview of the jQuery platform. So for the people who don't know what jQuery really is, well, it is actually quite a bit the same. It is a client-side scripting framework. It was introduced by a guy named John Resick in 2006, so it's actually not that old yet. But today it is a very popular JavaScript framework. It is in fact the most popular one out there. It's actually being used on about 50 or 60% of the top 10,000 websites that you all go to, like Amazon and all those sites. So many, many known sites use jQuery. So it has quite a good proven track of doing its job. Why is it so popular, you may ask? Why is jQuery more popular than the client-side library ever was? That never really took off, but this one really took off. Well, it focuses on leveraging what we already know. We all know HTML, we all know JavaScript, we all know CSS, and it focuses on leveraging these things. It doesn't try to bend the JavaScript language into something which it isn't. JavaScript was, for example, by the client-side library, made into an object-oriented language. JavaScript isn't an object-oriented language. It doesn't have namespaces and those things. And Microsoft tried pushing that into JavaScript. Other frameworks as well do this, but jQuery really doesn't do this. It just focuses on leveraging what we already know. It's also a very lightweight framework with an easy-to-read syntax. If you take a look at that line of code that you see there, it says, do find me something, then hide it, then change the CSS, and then fade it in. I think everyone can read that, even if you've never seen any line of jQuery code. It's very easy to read. It's very lightweight, so it's very easy, and it's also very easy to extend this language. You can write plugins. There are many plugins available. There's also an active community available for it, so if you need something, some help, there's an active community for it available. And most important for us as .NET developers, it is on Microsoft's radar. Why is it on Microsoft's radar? How can we see that? Well, if you start today a new Visual Studio project, be it a web forms project or be it an MVC project, there's automatically the jQuery files included. Microsoft just puts the jQuery 1.4.2 inside of each Visual Studio MVC or web forms project, meaning that they focus on it. There is IntelliSense available, there is a CDN that we just saw. It will also download those files from a CDN if you want to. And as mentioned last year at Mix, they said they were not going to put any further development in there, in their own library, but they were going to focus on building plugins for jQuery. And so they introduced three plugins, which we'll see later: data linking, globalization, and templating. Another reason why jQuery is so popular is the so-called unobtrusive JavaScript. Now, what is unobtrusive JavaScript? When you write normal or regular JavaScript, you think of it like an onClick equals this event. That's how you think of your JavaScript code. Now, think back of when you did your first web form development many years ago, for example. What you did, or what you really liked, was the fact that you could split your markup, your HTML, from your C# or your VB code. So the splitting of these two things, not mingling those two, was actually the good thing that you really liked. Now, why don't you do this with your JavaScript code? Well, because it's quite verbose. It generates quite a lot of code to achieve that. Not having your JavaScript, your behavioral code, mixed with your markup code is very intensive to write. You can see it there at the top, at the bottom. There is a lot of code being written to actually pick out the lines or pick out the elements that I need to do something with. Will normally write with an onClick equals this or that. Now, with jQuery, writing this kind of code is very easy, because this kind of code is what is called unobtrusive JavaScript code. It's actually making sure that the behavioral code, that the JavaScript code, is not mixed with the markup code. And that is possible with jQuery, because jQuery was actually written with this kind of code, or this kind of writing of code, in mind. And you see that as we write some jQuery in just a few minutes. Now, a few things that you really have to grasp before we can take a look at the rest are some so-called jQuery fundamentals. A few things that you really have to understand before we can continue. The most important thing, I think, is the dollar sign. When you take a look at jQuery code, there's a lot of dollar signs in there. These dollar signs refer to the so-called jQuery function. And a jQuery function is a JavaScript object, or represents a JavaScript object, that contains an array of DOM elements. Elements that were selected within the DOM of the page. Mm-hmm. And once you have selected them, you can start doing things with them. So it's just an array that was a selection, the result of making a selection on the page, an array of elements. And you can do stuff with those elements. You can hide them, you can show them, you can do whatever you want with them. So how do we write this? We specify the dollar sign, the jQuery function, and then we specify a so-called selector. And we say, I want to select this or that. And then I want to do something with this. And this array, this JavaScript object, is called a wrapped set. And in many cases, all those functions like showing and hiding, and we'll see more later on, they will always return that same wrapped set, allowing you to, well, continue your work on that same wrapped set. In many cases, you're going to see so-called jQuery chaining, which is many many functions being done on the same set of elements. So first I select something, then I hide them, then I show them, then I change the CSS, and so on and so forth. So the wrapped set is the result of executing a selector on your DOM. It's just returning you a number of elements. The second fundamental is called the ready handler. Now, the ready handler is a very important piece in your JavaScript code because it makes sure that the JavaScript code gets executed at the correct time. Automatically, what do you think of when you say, I want to run my JavaScript code? You think of executing it in the window on load. Now, the window on load will actually wait too long for JavaScript code to run. Many people don't know that, but it's actually too late. Because the window on load waits for the entire page to load, including things like an external image, for example. If that image is loading slowly, your JavaScript code will not be able to run. In jQuery, this is solved by the ready handler. Because it doesn't have to really wait when the images have to be loaded, it just has to wait for the DOM to be ready. The page elements have to be created. And that's what the ready handler does. Browser independently, it will make sure that code gets executed whenever the elements have been created. So we don't have to wait for external images and so on and so forth. How is this done? Well, it's very easy, as you can see there. It says $document, so this is a function on the document object, and then I append the ready function on that. And within that function, I write all the rest of my code that I just want to execute when the page is ready. So I just say, all the code that is within that ready function, execute it when the page is ready. And that's the ready handler. And a third fundamental, before we take a look at some code, is selectors. Now, selectors are basically the heart of jQuery. We've just spoken about the dollar function that we pass a selector to make sure that we get an array of elements. The selectors are basically the selection engine allowing you to make sure that you specify a query to execute on your DOM to get a few elements back. How do the selectors look? Well, basically, those are CSS selectors. So again, if you know CSS already, jQuery will just leverage that knowledge. You don't have to learn anything new. It's just some CSS being done here. The first one there says, to the jQuery function, I pass a selector that I specify to have p a e dot some class. So what I'm saying there is, give me all the elements within the page that specify to this follow this specification. And the specification is there has to be a hyperlink that has a class, some class on it applied, and they have to lie within a paragraph. That's a selection that I'm doing. And it will return me all those elements within that page. The second one, for example, says, give me all the anchor tags, all the hyperlinks that have a class within that paragraph, and also give me all the diffs. So the rep set is extended with all the diffs on the page. There's also the ability to do selections based on the parents, and that's called child selection. A child selection basically says, give me all the hyperlinks that live within an li, within a list element, that live within a ul, that have a class applied on it, some list. So only direct children are made here. So if there, for example, is a diff around that li, it wouldn't be included in the result set. So this is just querying the DOM that I'm doing here. I can also query based on attributes, for example. I can say, give me all the anchor tags within the page that have an attribute href that has that contains a link to my blog, snowball.be. Or, for example, give me all the spans that have a class that starts with the word sum. Or just give me all the spans that have a class attribute on there. So selection is made just based on these attributes. We can also do selections based on the position within the page using the jQuery function. For example, give me the first hyperlink. That's A colon first. Just give me the first hyperlink within the page. Or give me the even diffs. This can be useful, for example, if you want to have a table with alternating row colors. You can say, give me all the even row numbers and all the odd rows, and so I can change the CSS, for example. All right. There's also some specific ones. For example, the last ones are custom selectors. They basically do some specific selection on the page. For example, the first one says, give me all the checked input fields. So all the ones that have been checked, even if they have been checked by the user, return those to me in the result set. Let me show you these in a small demo. So I have to go can close this one down. There we go. Let's start by running this. I'm going to make, I'm going to zoom in a bit for you to read it. I'm going to select all the divs, the spans that live within a div. Make that selection and make them blue, or aqua, whatever. How is this done? Well, let's take a look at the code that makes this selection. So first, I'm doing a selection within my page. But actually, I'm doing that selection only after the DOM is ready. I want this code to execute only after the DOM is ready. So I specify the ready function, the ready handler, at the very top. It means that all the code that is within this ready handler only can be executed after the DOM elements are ready. It doesn't matter if the page isn't ready, it will not be executed. So I'm safe in that case. And then what I'm doing a jQuery function. I'm passing it a selector. I'm specifying to return me all the spans that live within a div, and I'm going to change the color of those. I can also say, for example, give me all the anchors that live within an li that live within a ul. Give me all the anchor tags that live within a list element within that unordered list. That's this one. Specifying this selector, and then I'm changing the class. So again, these have to be direct children. That's children selection that I'm doing here. I can also specify to, for example, only return me the links to an external site. This can be useful, for example, if you want to add a small image that specifies this to be an external link. I can change the CSS, but I have to make the selection first. So what I'm doing here is I'm saying, give me all the anchor tags that F and href attribute that starts with HTTP. Oops, didn't have to select it. Let's start with HTTP. All right, so let's take a look at, we execute this one. It's only getting this one because this one is, it's dropping this one from the selection because it wasn't in, it doesn't have an external link. It only has an internal link. All right. Let me show you a few more. As mentioned, I can also do selections based on the position in the page. For example, here, I want to have the first hyperlink on the page. The first hyperlink on the page is using position selection. A colon first gets me the first page, first link on the page. And let's go to the last one. This one uses those custom selectors. For example, give me all the inputs that are checked. I'm going to make a few selections here. Give me the ones that have been checked. If I change it, it will include that one as well. Now, how did it actually do that? Using these custom selectors, it's basically checking again, running that function again on the client side. So input colon checked returns me all the checked inputs on the page. Now, apart from making selections, the jQuery function, just like many other things in jQuery, is overloaded. Overloaded means based on the number of parameters that I'm going to pass it, it's going to either do this or do that. If I pass it an HTML string instead of a selector, it's going to create those elements dynamically for me. It is possible to dynamically generate new elements on the page. So you can see here. So instead of passing a selector as a parameter, I am passing an HTML string. I'm passing to the jQuery function there a div with some string in there. And so jQuery will know this is not a selector. This is instead an HTML string. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to return those elements. I'm going to create those elements. It is actually behind the scenes creating a new wrapped set. We're just creating those new elements, and we can do stuff with those as well. Let me show you, because this is the way to create dynamically some new elements on the page. So here, I'm specifying an HTML string as the parameter for that jQuery function. So I'm saying, create me a paragraph within there, a hyperlink to jQuery.com. And let me show you this one. I'm going to create a few elements. So I'm going to create a new link, or I'm going to create a new image. It doesn't depend. Doesn't matter what you actually start creating. So I'm creating a new link here, and I'm appending that to the page body. Creating a new link, creating a new image, and appending that to the body. So the jQuery function is overloaded in a sense that it is possible to either create elements or select elements. Now, once we have those elements, once we have those elements, we actually want to do stuff with it. It's not useful to just have those elements and have them sit there. We can do stuff with that wrapped set. We can either do stuff with the set as a whole, because it's just an array of elements, or we can also do stuff with the elements individually. That's okay. Now, what can we do with those elements? For example, we can check the size of the wrapped set. I can ask, for example, how many elements are there in there? It's an array. Just how many elements do you have? I do that using the first line of code there. Just give me all the hyperlinks on the page and what is the size of that array. In many cases, you don't want to use the wrapped set as a whole. You just want to do stuff with the individual elements. For example, I can say, give me the first element. It's an array, so I just use arrays notation using square brackets, or I just say get me element number 0. I can also loop over the elements with an each function. Now, each function basically loops over each element within that array. So I'm specifying here the each function, and that I pass another function that will do stuff with the individual element. For example, here I'm specifying that each function has another function that will change the alt of the image. I can also combine, for example, wrapped sets. I can also filter a wrapped set if I want to. For example, I can specify to retrieve all the anchor tags, but filter them out based on those that only have an href, that start with an href attribute. And I can filter my wrapped set. It is just an array, so all the things that you are used to do on arrays, you can do that on jQuery arrays as well. Let me show you this in very quickly, because this is not a rocket science to work with. So, for example, let's ask wrapped set how many links there are on this page to an external site, meaning they start with HTTP. So it basically says, well, there are 2 on this page. How did it know that? Well, I passed it a selector that counted all the anchor tags with an href attribute that starts with HTTP. This returned me an array, and I say, give me your size. Put that in an alert. I can also work with the individual elements, as mentioned. For example, here I'm going to say, give me all the list elements and change the background color on these using an each function. So using an each function that you can see here, I first say, give me all the list elements that are children of an unordered list, of a UL, and then change or loop over them using the each function. And based on the index, you should either apply another CSS color on it. So I'm looping through that list of elements. Where were the slides? Here they are. All right. Now, what you've seen me doing is actually changing attribute values. I've been changing colors. I've been changing alts. This is actually what you want to do with your elements. You just don't want to have that set. You want to do stuff with the individual elements. And what you do with those elements is basically changing the value of an attribute. The attribute function inside of jQuery is the most useful thing for that. For example, I have an image, and I want to get the attribute value. That's what the first line of code will do there. Just using the attribute function, passing in the name of the attribute, will retrieve me the attribute. Again, this is also overloaded. For example, I can change the alt value by passing a second parameter. which is going to be the name of the, or the value of the alt attribute that I want to pass in. So I specify here that the alt of the image should be me in Paris, while I just pass it as a second parameter. Again, jQuery has many overloads available. In most cases, what you're going to change is UI properties, UI values, things like CSS values, things like CSS classes. That's what you're going to change. For example, I want to change a CSS class. I want to apply, let's say, a CSS class. I just use the add class on this. I select something, I apply the add class on it, and it will change the CSS class that's applied on it. I can also do a remove class, toggle class. I can also, if I don't have a CSS class at the ready, change the CSS values automatically. For example, I can say, select me a div, and then using the CSS function, change the value of a CSS property. For example, I specify here to change the background color to yellow. And it's going to change the CSS property to yellow. If I want to change content, I can use the HTML function. Again, it's overloaded. If I don't specify any parameters for the HTML function, it's going to get me the HTML. If I specify it a value, it's going to set the HTML. This doesn't work for form fields, for example, an input. It doesn't work. The HTML doesn't work with that. For that, you have to use the val function that also overloads to getting or setting a value. Let me show you these in action. So, it's still running. It's fine. I'm going to change the attribute here. So I'm going to first try getting an attribute value. It's retrieving me the name of the value of the source for that image. How is it doing that? Well, for that, it basically has this one. It basically just uses the attribute function, and I'm passing in the name of the attribute that I want to retrieve. If I would have used this one, it would have changed the value automatically of this alt attribute. As you can see, there are many more demos. You can take a look at them at your own pace. They're all going to be in the download that you can download from my blog. So we don't have time because this is a session that can easily spend 3 hours for just using jQuery. So there's many demos that basically show you everything that is in there. If you want to change the CSS background color, then we can either do that with a CSS add class or with the CSS function. So here I'm going to change the background color of that UL. Well, how did we do that? Let's take a look. I selected the list that has an ID my list, and I used the CSS function to specify the background color to pink. You can also, if you need more than one value, you can pass an object that will contain all the values that you need, and that will also work. All right. I'm going to skip this one just to save some time. So you can change attributes, of course. What you can also work with, and that's of course very important, is events. Now, the eventing model that we know, that we all know probably, the onClick equals this or that, was introduced many, many years ago by Netscape. Netscape Navigator introduced that first scripting model. Now, there are some problems with that scripting model. For example, it's very difficult to write unobtrusive JavaScript. It's very difficult to extract that JavaScript code just into one file. That almost doesn't work. And what it also cannot do, that model, is have onClick equals this and onClick equals that on that same element. It is not possible to execute two different functions for a specific event for a specific element. That doesn't work. Now, a few years later, they introduced something called DOM level 2 event model. And DOM level 2 event model used the concept of listeners, taking away those abstractions that we had with DOM level 0 event model. But the problem there was that there were introduced some browser dependencies. This worked differently in IE than in other browsers. Now, we can fix this ourselves. We can write code that checks which browser is actually running the code. But that's a real mess to write. jQuery, on the other hand, manages this. It will allow us to just specify which, or just say we want to execute this event for this or this function, for this event, for this element, do it whichever browser which you are using, and it will actually work. So jQuery takes away the browser dependencies for this. Now, how does this work? This works using the bind function. The bind function, you select an element, you use it on that element by specifying the name of the event you want to use and then the function you want to use. So there you can see I'm selecting an image and I'm linking the click event with that function alert using the bind function. That's just what you have to do. And it will generate the link, you know, the event link between the two. There is a specific case of this, you see at the bottom line, the run function. The run function basically removes itself after it has been executed once, as the word says it. I execute once and then I just put myself into sleep mode. It doesn't execute again. Now the bind function only works for already existing elements. If you have, for example, and which you will automatically have, dynamically created elements, it doesn't work because the bind searches the page for already existing elements. If the element doesn't exist on the page, it won't work. For that, we have the live function. The live function, you pass the function and the event and the function, and it will search for all elements that match the selector, even if they are created after the page has been initialized. So there I'm saying, give me or append me all the elements that have a class, some class, if they are available now or later, and link them with the live function, or create a link with the live function using click event and that function. So if I now dynamically create elements that match that selector, they will also get that click event function executed whenever I click on them. It doesn't have to exist whenever this code is executed. Let me show you this in action. So we have a page here. Let me first open the browser. Events. So this is, perhaps I should zoom in a bit, zoom out a bit because it might not be readable. This is an image. I click on this image. It executes me an alert. I click on it again. It still executes that alert. All right, let's take a look what it generated for us. There was some extra code being, some extra lines of text being generated here. So there is a hover event, it seems, because every time I hover on it, it says you hovered me. It says, hi there, you clicked me again. And this is a once-in-a-lifetime click. A few more hovers. Hi there, you clicked me again, and so on. Let's take a look at the code that made these lines of code appearing, or these lines of text. So, I have here that giraffe image, that image that you saw at the top, and I'm using the bind function to link the click event with this function. That's the hi there. On that same element, I'm doing a second click, or second bind, using the click and another function. You clicked me again. So it is possible on the same element to attach two event handlers. There's a mouse over. Then there is the one which only executes once. This is a once-in-a-lifetime click. If we take a look back at this one, it doesn't... Oops. Wait, plus. This line of code was only once in that list. This is a once-in-a-lifetime click. This was removed afterwards. And then, let me now generate a new image on this page. I generate a new image. And when I now click on this one, it also executes this alert. Now, how was this executed? This was done using the live function. I generate a new image, so it matches the selector image. And I specify the click event and also this alert, but now using the live. And whichever image is on that page will automatically get this click with event associated with this function. All right? So that's how the live will work. So we are a bit running behind of time. I will skip animations and I will round up with Ajax. We'll finish with Ajax. We won't have time to do everything, I'm sorry. So Ajax is really important. Huh? In the beginning we saw how we could use Ajax from Microsoft in general. Now Ajax also works perfectly in harmony with jQuery. Now, Ajax is actually already quite old. You may not know this, but Ajax was first introduced in some form in 1998 already, when Microsoft introduced what is called Web Access, Outlook Web Access, making it possible to do calls to the server, again, from script. Now, at that time, that was done using an ActiveX object. Years later, this was taken over by other browsers, introduced in, for example, Gmail, as the XML HTTP request object. Now, the XML HTTP request object was in IE 6, for example, still an ActiveX object. In other browsers, it wasn't, making or resulting in the fact that to write code to talk to that XML HTTP request object, we had to write code again that checked if we are running in IE or in another browser. Again, writing code that checks browsers or browser versions is really ugly, so jQuery solves that for us. Now, how does it do that? Well, the most basic function to do this is the load function. The load function allows you to load a server-side resource from code. You just say load in that specific resource, a URL, and it will call from script to make a call to that script to make a call from script to that URL and load that HTML in the client. That's just what you do. You see there, I have some div and I ask it to load a specific URL, passing in a function that's a callback. Now the load will actually do a get or a post based on if you pass it parameters or not. If you don't pass it parameters, it will do a get. If you pass parameters, it will do a post because it's gonna post those parameters to the server as well. Let's take a look at the load function. So I have here a div and I want to load in some content from an HTML page. Take a look. I'm going to make a call from this page. So I'm going to load an HTML page. There is no postback happening. So I'm now doing a call from using just jQuery. This content is dynamically being loaded. How is this done? Using the load function. Because I did not specify any parameters, this resulted in a get being executed. It's just getting values. If I want to do a callback, well, that's fine as well. I just pass it another callback, just pass a function. This is also resulting in a get being executed. So in this case, I really don't have a lot of influence on what is being executed. I cannot say do a get or do a post. Let's take a look at another sample. I'm going to ask it to load some seasons here. Going to load. There we go. Now it has done a get again. I select the season. It's now posting that to the server. So it's now doing a post. How do I know that? Well, let's take a look at the code. So first I've asked what is called a web handler, an ASHX, to load in the seasons. That was what you saw in the dropdown. But then when I selected the season, I'm again doing the load. And now I'm specifying here as a second parameter for this function call the season that I selected. That season that I selected has to be posted to the server. So now the load is going to result in a post being done to the server. All right? Now, so in some way we have a bit of influence on a get or a load or a post being done with the load, but we really don't have that much influence. If we want full influence, we can use the AJAX function itself, which is like the mother of all AJAX calls. You just say, load this resource using the AJAX function. And the AJAX function has many, many parameters that you can use. In fact, it has a specific method to define some defaults for your page. For example, using the AJAX setup, I can specify to always use a post, to always use a specific timeout, and so on and so forth. Let me show you this one, and then we'll finish off. This one, AJAX number 5. All right. So instead of using the load, I'm now going to say load me the page using AJAX. I specify here that I want to use a get, use this AJAX, it's going to be HTML, and this has to be executed when the page is ready. So the result is of course the same. I can load this with AJAX. It's the same result, but now I have full control over how I do my AJAX call from my jQuery code. And this also works with web forms. This also works with MVC. If you want to load some content with web forms, it works perfectly. Many people don't know that jQuery works with web forms. Many people think it only works with MVC. Well, that's not true. The only thing that you have to do is have an addressable URL or URI to load data from the server. This is a web forms page. Page here. This is the URL of my page, ajax.ajax6.aspx/add item. That's a page method on that page. That's just a web form. If I can call this from AJAX, if it's an addressable URL, I just have to pass this URL and then it's addressable. If I want to do the same for MVC, well, it will just work. This is a very small MVC demo. It will also just, this, here it is. The only thing that we need for the AJAX call is a URL that we can address, and jQuery can work with that technology. So it works perfectly with MVC, it works perfectly with web forms. You don't have anything specific to do, because it just works. So it seems that, because the girl here in front of me is shouting stop at me, so it seems that I have to stop. So we didn't get to do all the content on jQuery, which is a pity, of course. But I just want to leave you with the thought that Microsoft really invests in jQuery. Microsoft also invests in AJAX, script manager, the AJAX calls and stuff like that, and the control toolkit. Those things are still being invested in. But jQuery really is the thing to go here. It's going to be the future for Microsoft as well going forward. They're investing it. They're doing a lot of new things in jQuery. They're an official contributor. So I think if you start today with scripting inside of .NET, that jQuery really is the way to go. So I want to leave you with that thought. Download the slides, download the demos to have much more content. So I want to thank you for being here and listening to me. And I hope that you enjoy the rest of the day. Thank you.